The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KYRS or its underwriters.
Now on KYRS, LP Spokane, you're listening to a special Veterans Day edition of Take the Power Back, hosted by Mike Kress. Parents, teachers, and students are encouraged to record this program. This special broadcast of Take the Power Back was written, recorded, and produced by Mike Kress, with the additional voices of Terrell McDonald and Rusty Nelson, and music by Pink Floyd, Roger Waters, and Mike Kress. Email us at takethepowerback@kyrs.org or call 509-747-3807. You're listening to KYRS, LP Spokane.
Stepped off the World Airways MD-11 in Saudi Arabia. The air smelled like sewage, the night's heat felt like a steamy blanket on my face, and the ground war of Desert Storm was over. I was an Air Force crew chief, doing my first Persian Gulf tour during the post-war phase known as Operation Southern Watch. During my 7 years of active duty, I didn't experience combat. There were occasional skirmishes between coalition aircraft and Iraqi forces, but I can't dishonor those who've been in combat by saying I've lived through war. I served indirectly in the pursuit of war. But I've seen enough war at a distance, from the Philippines to the Middle East. During this show, I hope to honor veterans, their families, and the victims of war with some truth. In the words of Orwell, during times of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act. As we approach Veterans Day, nearly 2,100 troops have died in Iraq, over 15,000 have been wounded, and American casualties escalate annually in Afghanistan. About 100,000 Iraqi people are dead because of our invasion and occupation of Iraq. As the wheels come off the lies that got us there, it's my dream that someday there will be no more veterans. If there are no more veterans, there will be no more victims of war. You're listening to Take the Power Back on KYRS Thin Air Community Radio. I'm your host, Mike Kress. I went into the military just after I turned 17, during those glorious Reagan years. I lived in Recession, Texas, had no job, little hope of finding a decent job, and I couldn't afford college, the military was my escape. My story is similar to millions of others who've enlisted in the military, most of them signing up to escape poverty, to earn money for college, to find a place where they can achieve goals and acquire skills that'll give them a chance at good jobs when they're civilians again. Sometimes people enlist for adventure, for the travel, because they're patriotic, because they like tanks, fighter planes, or guns, or because they want to kill foreigners, or for a combination of some or all of these reasons. But mostly people join because the military looks like the most affordable path to a more prosperous future. This is often referred to as the economic draft. Now, to get in the military, a young man or woman must go through a recruiter. A recruiter gig is pretty nice. You get to look good because you're paid extra for uniforms. You're usually sharp as hell and represent your service well. And the teenagers you meet, they don't know you, but they think you're pretty cool. Most recruiters are okay in that they're just doing a job they believe in. They won't lie to you, but they won't tell you the whole truth. When times are good for recruiters, when potential recruits are coming in through the window, most recruiters are easygoing and relaxed. They even turn some people away. But when times are tough, when quotas aren't getting met, recruiters get pressured, and that makes them aggressive. Many of them lie or skirt the rules to enlist new recruits. In fact, after parental complaints hit media outlets and school boards, the Pentagon got worried. Things got so bad that in May, the military took an unprecedented day off from recruiting in order to retrain all of its recruiters. Dave Wagner of WLWT News in Cincinnati did a report about recruiting last May 18th and even caught some dishonest recruiters with a hidden camera.
As part of the No Child Left Behind Act, all schools that receive federal funding, and nearly all of them do, are required to give military recruiters access to your child's name, address, and phone number.
From a recruiting standpoint, that's a great thing, because a lot of the people we couldn't get numbers to actually tell this story, the Army story, the Armed Forces story to before, we now can.
I'm not trying to do a sales pitch.
But as Target 5 discovered, those military pitches can turn from fact to fiction in a matter of seconds. Target 5 sent four young men with hidden cameras into every tri-state Armed Forces recruiting center. The conversations began with talk of job security.
We guarantee you a job.
Signing bonuses.
That's $20,000.
That's $20,000.
And cash for college.
$70,000 for college.
But when the questions turn to safety, some tri-state recruiters make Iraq sound more like a trip to Tahiti than a journey to war.
You have more chance of dying here in the United States at a, 36% kill rate here in the United States. People just dying left and right. You have more chance of dying over here than you do over there.
The U.S. does not have a 36% kill rate. If that were true, more than 100 million people, one-third of the U.S. population, would be killed each year.
To just openly not tell the truth, to push it aside, that's just wrong.
Back at the recruiting center...
The way I am, I'm a noble type of guy.
But you'd never know that, based upon what he tells our young recruit.
If you get on the internet and look up how many deaths... or in Columbia, South Carolina in the past year, year and a half, and then compare that to how many deaths in Iraq. There's more deaths going on in Columbia, South Carolina for no reason, none, over a pair of Nikes, and over a jacket, people stealing people's wallets, shooting people. There's more deaths going in Columbia, South Carolina. I know I just got back from there. Than there was in the whole time when I was in Iraq.
So Target 5 called the Columbia, South Carolina Police Department. And despite the words of our tri-state recruiter, this city is hardly a hotbed for crime.
There were 16 homicides in the city of Columbia in the year 2004. This year to date, we have 5 in the city.
And if that recruiter thinks Columbia, South Carolina is bad, listen to what this G.I. Joe Isuzu says about the dangers of driving around Dayton, Ohio.
Dayton area alone, which is about 4 or 5 counties, Dayton area alone, 1,500 people died in 2 weeks. You know what that was from? Car wrecks. Those numbers that we get from the actual Highway Patrol.
Okay.
So, I mean, all that stuff's factual. So you look at that way, we've lost 1,500 soldiers so far over in Iraq. We've been over there for 3 years.
Right.
If you add it together, 1,500 people die in 5 counties alone within 2 weeks from just from car wrecks?
The truth is, there aren't 1,500 deaths from car wrecks in the entire state of Ohio for an entire year.
I don't even know where he came up with it. I don't know. It's just insane. Yeah, yeah. He could be your car salesman of his season.
The national spokesman for the Army Recruiting Command at Fort Knox tells Target 5, I don't know why anybody would even let that phrase even come out of their mouth. For whatever reasons, these recruiters must have found these talking points somewhere on their own. I don't know.
Do you think that in the private conversations they're having with recruits here, that they're thinking, no one will ever check this, no one will ever know?
I'm sure that anyone who would tell that, I'm sure that's exactly what they're thinking.
Since the war began, about 1,500 U.S. servicemen and women have been killed in Iraq. The violence has made military recruiting more difficult, often because parents worry about their kids' safety. But recruiters are tracking down teens when parents aren't around, and the pressure can be immense.
How many of you have been approached by a military recruiter in the past year?
In Mr. Jewell's American government class.
Well, I think they're really biased.
Milford High School students are talking about military recruiters.
Recruiter called me up, told me they got a new deal going on, $5,000 to enlist now.
I was told that if I signed up for the Marines, they'd give me a $10,000 signing bonus on the spot. I didn't believe that one.
Signing bonuses and college cash are being used to attract fresh faces to the armed forces. But Army recruiters have missed their quotas for the past 3 months. The Marines short of their goal for the past 4 months. When this high school senior says his parents are concerned about his safety in the military, this recruiter puts on the full court press.
But don't hesitate. Don't be hanging. All right. Even if they really don't want to talk about it, we can still sit down and talk. All right, because by you walking in here, that shows that you're interested.
Right.
And I would hate for you to be denied this United States Army opportunity. Honestly.
Recruiters are supposed to be the top of their career field throughout the United States. Yeah. The best infantry, the best cooks, the best medical technicians, the people that you want to represent your service. Those are the ones you bring out on recruiting duty. There are some soldiers who are great soldiers, but pitiful salesmen.
And of course the news media is going to blow it way out of proportion.
While some recruiters blame the media for hyping the danger in Iraq, this recruiter who served on the front lines has a straightforward approach.
I'm curious about how dangerous it really is over there, because in the news and everything, people are dying.
Yeah, it's war.
Yeah.
This week in the tri-state, the realities of war are tragically clear. Another goodbye for two young men who fought and died. Nearly a third of those killed in Iraq are under the age of 22, the vast majority from the Army and Marine Corps, 111 of them from Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky. As a country honors their sacrifice.
Good morning, how's everybody doing?
These high school seniors get ready for their military service.
I'm Craig Krynest. I go to Harrison High School, and I'm going to the Air Force Academy.
With a send-off and straight talk from their local congressman.
Good luck to you. We need to make sure that those kids who are considering a military career get the true facts. They're great young men and women. They're serving their country, or will be in the near future, and we ought to be honest with them. There's no question that Iraq can be a dangerous place.
I was watching news the other day in Cincinnati alone. Mm-hmm. As of April, there was 867 deaths.
Yeah.
In Cincinnati.
While some recruiters play it loose with the facts.
88 people over there died from gunshot wounds.
Bill Fisher says it worked for him to play it straight.
We have like the greatest armed forces in the world right now. The kids are just fantastic, you know. And to sit back and say something like this is just silly. It's just, you don't need to. You don't have to sway them, you know, by innuendos or lies. You just have to search for the ones who want to join. And there are tons of them.
I can at least provide you with honest answers.
That's fine.
Okay. I can be the honest Dave around the corner.
That was a May 2004 report from WLWT-TV News in Cincinnati, and you're listening to Take the Power Back. Most Americans would say that it's an honorable thing to serve in our military, But military service is only as honorable as the manner in which the military is used. If our military is used dishonorably, as is widely acknowledged to have happened in Vietnam, then everyone's service is tainted by that dishonor. Has our military been used honorably lately? Do we Americans even consider this to be important? And do we as citizens have a role in ensuring our military is used honorably? Some would say no. It's up to the politicians who supposedly have all the facts to make decisions about military force. Others would say that military force is murder, and that when innocent people die, there is no honor in military service. My answer may differ from yours, but ask yourself, should the American military be used honorably, and are we as citizens responsible for how our military is used? If your answer is no, go get a cup of coffee. If your answer is yes, then let's think about how our military has been used recently. Alternative media, Army reports, Red Cross officials, and investigators from non-governmental organizations have documented acts of torture committed by U.S. personnel dating back to the start of the so-called War on Terror. Mainstream media reports reveal that our government has set up a secret gulag, or prison system, where people are locked away without charge, trial, or access to legal counsel. Is there any doubt that torturing prisoners, from Guantanamo Bay to Iraq to Afghanistan, is systemic? Torturing detainees didn't begin in Abu Ghraib, a fact brought home to me when Army Private Lindy England was interviewed last year about her involvement in the torture of Iraqi prisoners at Abu Ghraib prison. Lindy, photographed with a cigarette clamped in her mouth as Iraqi men were forced to fondle themselves in front of her, Lindy is a small-town girl. And I felt sick while this pathetic young woman told America she was only following orders and felt no guilt about what happened in Abu Ghraib. And I wondered, how could someone described as a decent person find it acceptable to abuse, humiliate, rape, and torture other human beings? How could she find the orders of her superiors lawful? How could she witness the sadistic behavior of her comrades and not object to it? Unfortunately, like Lindy, too many Americans think nothing wrong occurred in Abu Ghraib. As long as America does it, it's okay, right? So the rationalizations rush like water from a spigot. These were pranks, blowing off steam, getting information, confronting terrorism, returning the favor, an eye for an eye, protecting freedom, bringing democracy, giving them what they deserve, treating them in a way they understand. Never mind that 70-90% of the detainees in Iraq were innocent of any wrongdoing. Never mind that those dismissing the abuses would certainly call it torture if it were them or a family member who was raped, paraded naked, sodomized with a broom handle, or attacked by military dogs as cameras caught the crimes. Never mind that such treatment undermines every treaty America ever signed and every value America ever claimed to stand for. Now, I'm overwhelmed not just by the Lindy England's lack of remorse about U.S. war crimes, but also by the lack of concern among the masses of our society. The dishonorable actions of those soldiers make me feel ashamed to be a veteran, and I'm ashamed to be an American when I hear anyone defend such indefensible acts. A nation that engages in torture or sends people to other countries that will torture them, as we've done since 9/11, is not a nation worth respect. A government that commits such crimes is on par with bloody regimes we've condemned. A society that rationalizes the use of torture with excuses like, "We're not as bad as them," is surely at the brink of spiritual collapse. To what are we as a nation setting our moral compass? Where's the bar? I was taught as a kid that we should live up to America's highest ideals, not lower ourselves to the level of animals. Even Republican Senator John McCain, who supports the war in Iraq, has taken a stand against torture and abuse by our military. And he recently said, "This isn't about who the detainees are, this is about who we are. These are the values that distinguish us from our enemies." And let me just add how scary it is that it takes a wealthy, white, conservative politician like McCain to bring Congress around about crimes that some of us have screamed about for years. Now, as responsible as they are for their actions, Lindy England and her fellow low-ranking torturers can't be separated from an entire society that readily reaches for violence to solve almost every problem. And isn't our government part of our society? Doesn't our government, in fact, dominate the public discourse about how we respond to perceived threats? Would there even be a debate about torture if our president and his cronies hadn't used executive orders and creative memos to justify torture? The military is a tool of our foreign policy. If our foreign policy is to torture or assassinate people without trial, the military will naturally be the instrument of that foreign policy. Is that how our country should act? Is that what our troops should be doing? Should our government tell our troops to commit crimes against humanity? Should we expect our troops to follow orders that break the Geneva Conventions? And are we winning the so-called war on terror or anything when our military tortures and murders people? The torture America has inflicted and seems to condone tells me that America is losing its soul. If we are to save it, we must re-examine and embrace the values that make any society great and worthy of respect. And if you think the flag represents liberty and justice for all, you damn well better make sure America's actions are in line with those values. And that includes the way our military is used, and it includes the conduct of every man and woman in the military.
He sat on a pile of stone. He stared at the broken bone in his head. Strains of a Viennese quartet rang out across the land. Thought to himself, memory is a stranger. History is for fools. And he cleaned his hands in a pool of holy writing. Turned his back on the garden and set out for the nearest town.
Roger Waters with a song called Perfect Sense Part 1. You're listening to Take the Power Back on KYRS. Many people call our service members heroes, but are our troops heroes by virtue of wearing a uniform? Is the meaning of hero diminished when everyone is a hero? Do we call our military men and women heroes to hide from our responsibility for them? To deny our sadness or our shame when we see reports about the dead and the wounded? Do we call them heroes to rationalize why we don't stand up for them when they're sent to kill and die in unnecessary wars without adequate tools and supplies and training and information? Or do we call them heroes to blind ourselves to the suffering they inflict on civilians as they unleash their bullets, bombs, shells, and missiles? Since 9/11, the American public has become more enamored with military power. And why not? The military has been offered as the tonic for every ill in the world by the Bush administration, and to an equal or lesser degree by every administration in our modern history. Here's the thing. Military power is seductive. Those who wield it can become drunk on it, like Bush. Using it can raise your poll numbers if your popularity is low, like Clinton. And the troops make good-looking backdrops when you make a speech. Wars increase the opportunities for medals. And when the military is popular, troops are treated well by civilians who otherwise have little use for the troops. Free beers at the airport, discounts at the mall. However, as America becomes more militaristic, we abandon battles here on the home front. Now, some say the war on terror comes first. They say this war on a word, this war on an idea, must be pursued without mercy, and all enemies must be destroyed, regardless of the cost. And so the war on poverty has been abandoned and considered lost. Few seem to think it can be won. And now America shrugs its collective shoulders at the poor. This, despite the fact that while the war on terrorism spawns new supplies of terrorists, a dedicated war on poverty can actually reduce the number of people who are poor. The war on poverty could be won if the will were there. As our government cuts $9.5 billion from Medicaid, $5 billion from child support enforcement, and $844 million from food stamps, I see only the will to grind the poor past poverty and into pulp. $466 billion taxpayer dollars went toward the military last year, and that doesn't include what we paid for Iraq and Afghanistan or the secret intelligence budget. And the rest of the entire world spent about $500 billion for military. Now, our closest competitor in military spending was China, which spent about $65 billion last year. Meanwhile, the U.S. forked out a measly $55 billion on education in 2004. Only 34% of our tax dollars will go to human resources next year, while 48% will go to military programs. So while there's ever more machinery for wars, there's less bread and butter for the poor, not to mention assistance for heating, medical care, child care, education, and housing. Yet even as poverty increases and hunger expands and the middle class shrinks, some among us are getting rich or richer from war. Now we've heard about Halliburton, Dick Cheney's former company, and Kellogg Brown and Root, corporations that have reaped multi-billion, no-bid contracts from our government. Unfortunately, war profiteering is nothing new. Big business, the military, and the government have long been tied together in an incestuous relationship. It's just more accepted now. Abraham Lincoln witnessed war profiteering and corporate involvement in war. In a letter to William F. Elkins during the Civil War, President Lincoln wrote,
"As a result of the war, corporations have been enthroned, and an era of corruption in high places will follow. And the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of the people until all wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic is destroyed. I feel at this moment more anxiety for the safety of my country than ever before, even in the midst of war. God grant that my suspicions may prove groundless."
Well, Abe, your suspicions weren't groundless. Former Republican President Dwight Eisenhower, no bleeding-heart liberal, spoke about the danger of the military-industrial complex during his presidential farewell speech.
"In the councils of government, we must guard against
the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals.
Now, some people might dismiss Eisenhower and Lincoln as self-interested politicians. So what would a fighting man's fighting man say about the influence of capitalism on our country, our citizens, and our men and women in uniform? Well, here are the words of America's most decorated general, Marine Corps Major General Smedley Butler, from his 1930s book, War is a Racket.
War is a racket. It always has been. It is possibly the oldest, easily the most profitable, surely the most vicious. It is the only one international in scope. It is the only one in which the profits are reckoned in dollars and the losses in lives. A racket is best described, I believe, as something that is not what it seems to the majority of the people. Only a small inside group knows what it is about. It is conducted for the benefit of the very few at the expense of the very many. Out of war, a few people make huge fortunes. Out of war, nations acquire additional territory if they're victorious. They just take it. This newly acquired territory promptly is exploited by the few, the self-same few who wrung dollars out of blood in the war. The general public shoulders the bill. But the soldier pays the biggest part of the bill. If you don't believe this, visit the American cemeteries on the battlefields abroad, or visit any of the veterans' hospitals in the United States.
Can't you see? It all makes perfect sense. Expressed in dollars and cents, pounds, shillings, and pence. Can't you see? It all makes perfect sense.
Child, why?
That was Roger Waters with a song called Perfect Sense, Part 2, and you're listening to Take the Power Back on KYRS. November 11th is Veterans Day. Until an act of Congress in 1954, we called it Armistice Day, and the original holiday commemorated the cessation of World War I, a war that was naively called the War to End All Wars. And here we are, 87 years later. Despite the carnage, the hideous death and dismemberment of millions, and the appearance of weapons like tanks, machine guns, and aircraft, the victims of World War I couldn't imagine the destruction that modern wars inflict on people and the environment. And just as naively, far too many people, particularly those who start the wars, they have no idea what war is. War is not an antiseptic array of green blips over Baghdad flashing across your TV screen. War is not a grainy black and white video showing a missile striking a pristine blow on a tank or a bunker. War is not a three-star general in a starched desert camouflage uniform entertaining a captive press corps. No, war is the frightened soldier at the front who misses his family and pisses himself when artillery blasts across his trench. And war is the guilt a person lives with when he or she accidentally incinerates men and women fighting on the same side. And war is the mother and child cowering for shelter, only to have their brains and guts blasted out by a bomb dropped from an F-15 at 30,000 feet. War is the men, women, and children who survive at the price of an arm, a leg, an eye, a foot, or the ability to move their bowels. War is the farms, rivers, schools, homes, and hospitals poisoned by depleted uranium munitions and the diseases spread by stagnant water and rotting corpses. War is the slow, agonizing death of human beings exposed to horrific nerve gases and biological stews. War is the blackened eyes and the broken bones of the tortured POW. And war is the fear that tastes like iron shavings in your mouth, fear that feels like lead in your limbs. War is the mangling of minds, the destruction of bodies, and the obliteration of futures.
It's only business. The alien prophet sighed. The vulture and the magpie took the cash box from its hook. The monkey in the corner wrote the figures in his book. Crazed to check out latest fingers flash across the table. And the captain hosts the menu of the day. And in banks across the world, Christian, Muslim, Hindu, Jew, and every other race, creed, color, tinder, you get down on their knees and pray. The raccoon! In the corner, well, he's slowly drifting out of range.
in the video zone. But the monkey's not watching, he slipped out to the kitchen to pile the dishes and answer the phone.
That was Roger Waters with What God Wants, Part 3. You're listening to Take the Power Back. Anyone who wears a military uniform should be respected for the personal sacrifices they make. Military life can be personally rewarding and gratifying, but I think the general adversity of military life warrants respect. But what about the families who've lost loved ones in the war? Do we respect them like we do our troops? Or is all our talk about supporting the troops, which includes their families, is that just lip service? Witness Cindy Sheehan, demonized by the right and people who don't like passionate dissent, all because the grief of losing her son moves her to protest the Iraq war. Doesn't she deserve the same respect as a grieving mother who supports the war? I can't imagine how painful it would be if my child died. But one father has given me some idea. Larry Morrison was a 45-year-old Army reservist who retired in 1995. And he worked for the post office over in Yakima when he was called back to active duty in 2004. He was a medic. Last June, he was sent to Iraq. During a mission with some Marines on September 19th, his vehicle was hit by a roadside bomb. Larry Morrison was killed. The night before he died, he called his wife, Becky, and told her he loved her and missed her. And he was happy, she said, because he was due to come home for 2 weeks in October. Larry Morrison's wife, his sons, and his family never saw him alive again. Morrison's father lives in Ohio. He's 73 years old. His name is Kenneth, and he told the Middletown Journal that he was proud that his all-American boy had served in Iraq. And he grieved for his son, and he didn't agree with those who opposed the war. I'm mad at God right now, Morrison's dad said. Then he added, but I still love this country. Imagine that. A father so torn apart by the loss of his child in this damn war, he can't get mad at the people who actually sent him off to die. Instead, he blames God. Imagine that. Imagine that.
Build on your own. Everybody got something he Jacob's home.
When the cowboys and Arabs brought down on each other at noon, in the coolness of the air of the city boardroom, when you stand by a passive spectator, the market dictator, will you discreetly withdraw with your rear breath to the boardroom door? Do you hear when the lion within you roars? Will you take to the hill?
Introduction to my weekly show, I refer to Take the Power Back as the show that understands the power of a question. And I have a question for the conservative listeners out there. I know that I have a few. And the question is our military always used as a last resort? And if not, what is it being used for? Do you think it was necessary to go to war in Afghanistan to supposedly get Osama bin Laden? Do you think it was necessary to go into war in Iraq? Do you really think that our leaders have been honest with us? Do you really think that the reasons we were given for going to war in, say, the last 50 years have been honest reasons? We need to step back from our ideology and our political affiliations, and we need to seriously examine the reality of warfare, of why we think that when the United States uses its military, it's always just. But when other countries use their military, it's always wrong. We need to be able to look through the eyes of people in other countries. We need to be able to step into the shoes of the people that we consider our enemies. We need to live up to the ideals of our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence, and the teachings of Jesus Christ, if we are, as some say, a Christian nation. And we also need to remember our history, and we need to teach it to our children, and we cannot sugarcoat it. We cannot lie about the wrongs that we have committed. We need to look at ourselves and our country in totality. And we need to listen to the words of people who came before us and warned us that what we're experiencing today, that the road we're going down today, was foreseen and avoidable.
The war in Vietnam is but a symptom of a far deeper malady within the American spirit. And if we ignore this sobering reality, we will find ourselves organizing clergy and layman concern committees for the next generation. They will be concerned about Guatemala and Peru. They will be concerned about Thailand and Cambodia. They will be concerned about Mozambique and South Africa. We will be marching for these and a dozen other names and attending rallies without end, unless there is a significant and profound change in American life and policy. So such thoughts take us beyond Vietnam, but not beyond our calling as sons of the living God. In 1957, a sensitive American official overseas said that it seemed to him that our nation was on the wrong side of a world revolution. During the past 10 years, we have seen emerge a pattern of suppression, which has now justified the presence of U.S. military advisors in Venezuela. This need to maintain social stability for our investments accounts for the counter-revolutionary action of American forces in Guatemala. It tells why American helicopters are being used against guerrillas in Cambodia, and why American napalm and green beret forces have already been active against rebels in Peru. It is with such activity in mind that the words of the late John F. Kennedy come back to haunt us. 5 years ago, he said, "Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable." Increasingly, by choice or by accident, this is the role our nation has taken, the role of those who make peaceful revolution impossible by refusing to give up the privileges and the pleasures that come from the immense profits of overseas investments. I am convinced that if we are to get on the right side of the world revolution, we as a nation must undergo a radical revolution of values. We must rapidly begin the shift from a thing-oriented society to a person-oriented society. When machines and computers, profit motives and property rights are considered more important than people, the giant triplets of racism, extreme materialism, and militarism are incapable of being conquered. a true revolution of values, will soon cause us to question the fairness and justice of many of our past and present policies. On the one hand, we are called to play the Good Samaritan on life's roadside, but that will be only an initial act. One day we must come to see that the whole Jericho Road must be transformed so that men and women will not be constantly beaten and robbed as they make their journey on life's highway. True compassion is more than flinging a coin to a beggar. It comes to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. A true revolution of values will soon look uneasily on the glaring contrast of poverty and wealth. With righteous indignation, it will look across the seas and see individual capitalists of the West investing huge sums of money in Asia, Africa, and South America, only to take the profits out with no concern for the social betterment of the countries and say this is not just. It will look at our alliance with the landed gentry of South America and say, this is not just. The Western arrogance of feeling that it has everything to teach others and nothing to learn from them is not just. A true revolution of values will lay hand on the world order and say of war, this way of settling differences is not just. This business of burning human beings with napalm, of filling our nation's homes with orphans and widows, of injecting poisonous drugs of hate into the veins of peoples normally humane, of sending men home from dark and bloody battlefields physically handicapped and psychologically deranged, cannot be reconciled with wisdom, justice, and love. A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death.
KYRS LP, Spokane.